This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
Hi everyone, welcome to Righty's House. Hope you are all safe and well. Today we're going to talk about Liverpool's win over Bournemouth, Arsenal beating Palace, some AFCON stuff, and much, much more. And my guests are Musa Kwonga
and Ryan Hunt.
Good talk.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Very well, very well.
What's happening, Stadio?
Good, we're good.
We just get referred to as a pair now.
Yeah, you're Stadio. Stadio's in the house.
House Stadio.
House Stads. What's happening, man? How's everything going? It's been a tough one.
Yeah, lots going on.
How are you, man?
A bit saddened, obviously, with what's happened.
For those who might have missed this.
Yes, right.
Mike Maignan, for Milan against Udinese, I think got a lot of headlines, but also there was another incident for Casey Palmer, who plays for Coventry City. Sheffield Wednesday fans were seen making monkey gestures towards him on the weekend.
And the reason why, obviously, that one's more prevalent to me is because it's Casey Palmer's granddad was the manager of my Sunday morning team, 10B. He was the one that when I was like six he played me in the men's teams when I was just 16, just turning 17. So obviously, it's very, very personal. And to see that happen, this day and age, Sheffield Wednesday fans, and then you see Mike Maignan, you know, walk. I would walk off, you know, I'm seeing people saying because I tweeted about like, yeah, it's very easy for you to say, you know, but what about this? And what I said, I would walk off. And you know what I'd want? I'd want my white guys to walk, my white mates to walk off with me. It doesn't make sense, you as just a black guy, Moose, right, walking off because that doesn't help. It gives you all the headlight, gives you all that, the publicity, all the spotlight and that. And the more people walk off, the more your white teammates just walk off and say to you, come on, going off. That makes a bigger indentation into everything. It's not you that's like they said, right, I'm walking off because I've been racially abused. They're saying, we're not having that. We are not having our teammate being racially abused like that. Come on, off.
It's like whenever things like this happen in football, the invites go out to a lot of black journalists and pundits.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're asking black people how they feel about this. And I can't believe I'm repeating myself for the 200th time about this conversation. It's like, how do those Udinese fans around the people shouting abuse feel about that? They're the ones you should be asked. Mm. How do you feel that these people you disagree with are giving you a bad name in this stadium? What is the culture within this section of the fan base that has allowed that to grow to a point where it's got an international footballer walking off a field because he's like, this is my workplace. I didn't sign up for this. Yeah. You know, that to me is the conversation that is missing from all this.
There was a good piece by James Horncastle on The Athletic that kind of was just going through what happened. And Mike Maignan said that the referee, Fabio Marasca, Marasca said in his own opinion that he acted like a big brother. He listened, followed the protocol laid out by the the rule book. After they walked off, Milan were winning 1-0. They came back out. There was still an hour to go. Conceded straight away. But actually, there's an interesting thing that James points out in his piece, in that in a video right after the goal, a man behind Maignan's goal repeatedly shouted racist abuse at him. Mm. And what should have happened, according to the protocol, was the game should have been stopped then, and Milan should have been given a 3-0 win.
Absolutely.
So it's stuff like this where, like, even if you follow out all of the steps beforehand, there needs to be a definitive, almost like, I don't want to say landmark, because it kind of feels a little bit like, I don't know, it just feels a little bit too, it shouldn't be landmark. It should just be like,
how many chances are they going to get, right?
Exactly. It feels like the referees, I think, also are probably like scared of making a call that big. And actually, they just need to, because you've followed all the protocol, you've done all the announcements, you've taken them off the pitch, and they've come back on.
So then what happens is, right, it goes to a place like you're rightly saying there, right? You go to a place where you've gone through all the protocols, you come back, so there's no protocols for it. If all of a sudden they said, right, they've had their drinks, they're relaxed, they're ready to go again. What about now? Right.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, like, fans, like, if they actually see it impacting, like, if you are a load of people who are chanting racist abuse at someone, and you are the reason your team loses 3-0,
bro,
right? How quickly is that attitude going to change?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, am I being like,
No. It's so simple.
I think Ryan's nailed it. I think it's that thing. It's the fear of being the referee that creates that landmark.
So what? Someone's got to be that.
No, I think that's right. Don't get me wrong. I think that's right. But I also think that's the inertia. I think it's a human, it's a natural human fear to doing something unprecedented. Because if you think about what that would do, if that happens, you imagine just the conversations on public transport on the way home and all the fans talking about it going, how did we let it get to a point where a group of individuals who we say don't represent us felt emboldened enough to ruin the spectacle for everyone? How did we get to a point where that happened? That, I think, is the conversation.
I'll tell you what, it reminds me of, Moose, right, is when it used to happen, especially when I got started in 85, and it used to happen all the time. It was just a run of the mill. And you do sit in the dressing room, and what you're talking about, people not wanting to be that person who's standing up for it, not one person, apart from the other black players, just come over and just say, just keep going, bro. Just keep going, don't worry about it. And they said, score and that. And that's what everybody else says, score. But I remember there was, at no stage during my time of being racially abused, when, you know, did anyone stand up to say anything like, yeah, this is wrong, and how can this happen? Not one person. None of them. You know what I mean? You could imagine how well it would have looked for them now if they were the ones who, instead of thinking about the consequences of them being the one to start maybe whatever it starts, they just like, well, I'll just keep my head down and just keep going. You know, it's sad, because like when I look back in the dressing room, guys who are meant to be my friends, you know what I mean? I'm not saying, oh, they're not my friends deep down, but when you're dealing with that kind of beauty, you show how much people really care for you. And this is what happens when all of a sudden you're alone and you're looking for somebody who can help, and there's none. There's no one there.
And this is the thing. You look at the Mike Maignan video and him, he's walking off. That is an absolute textbook example of how your teammates back you.
Yeah.
That was absolute textbook. Arms around the shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
No the dispute. Ball. We didn't sign up straight for this. And actually, off, yeah. credit to the Italian, when the Italian co-commentators, who was like, I used to play football. I played in different places and I got abused by fans all over the place. And then he stopped and he said, but that's because they thought I was a bit of an ass, or they thought I wasn't playing well, or they thought I was playing well. He said, for people to come at you because of who you are, he said, it's another level of threat, another level of criticism. I thought this was absolutely amazing, because he nailed it. He didn't just palm it off as, we all get abused. He's like, no, there's something about the level and the intensity and the type of focus. He said, it's basically the dehumanization.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Which was
that's
really powerful.
Sooner people will be able to point at someone and said, you cost us. You cost us promotion. You cost us relegation. You cost us. It will stop. Why has it taken so long for us to realize that? Because it's too easy. You know, I'm tired. No more slogans. No more campaigns from clubs. No more T-shirts. No more badges. Because we've seen that, you know, no more fines. It doesn't work. Let's start hitting the clubs where it hurts and hitting the fans where it hurts them. Points. Simple.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
Okay, so Premier League, guys, Liverpool looking, can I say, I wouldn't say ominous because that's Man City with what Man City are doing and with people that are coming back. And obviously Kevin De Bruyne announced these comeback in such legendary fashion. So we know that they're coming.
Can I jump in? I'm really sorry, course, but Musa, did course. You see someone's been watching Game of Thrones?
I saw it.
Liverpool have trod these boards before. They know what to do. And no Trent, no Salah. And I thought that that Bournemouth game was going to be a tough one. But can I just say, Darwin Nunez, whatever anyone says, 10 goals, 10 assists, he's starting to do stuff. You know, people can say whatever they want about how many chances he misses. But like, I think Kanati and Virgil at the back, solid. I think that Bradley will come in and he looks like he's going to be solid for the time being, what he's doing. He looks really comfortable. But in the main, Liverpool, especially the way McAllister played the other day, I just feel like I fancy Liverpool. I really do. With everything what's happening.
For the title?
I do.
Oh no. The aggregators are going to be wild with that one.
I fancy Liverpool because of they know how to chase that fucking team down. Mm. And they know how to run from that team. Obviously, they're going to need the full strength to do that. But like Liverpool know how to get into the mindset of, I don't care how we beat Bournemouth, but we beat them. If we go there and it turns into 4-0, we'll take it. But we'll go there and we'll scrap out 1-0 to stay with those lot. Man City have created this and it's coming back now. Liverpool are coming back doing this. They're in that place. No one's talking enough about them, even though they are top. Everybody
you know
still...
it is, it's because I think why no one's talking about them is because they spent so much money in the off-season that people are... Off-season, look, it's been listening to like American sports podcasts.
Hey.
So much money spent in the summer that people weren't sure if they could integrate all that talent so quickly.
In time, yeah.
You know? Maybe. And also, you know, the teething problems is on the wide players, Nunez, like... And Salah just, and obviously Salah's got the bad injury, which is worse than feared by the looks of it. So the Salah injury is there, but I just think Liverpool have the depth and the versatility in attack to get this done, actually.
The second half, I think, was a prime example of this because the first half, they weren't great and Bournemouth have been really good this season.
Yeah.
We've talked about them quite a lot about how impressive they've been. But I think the second half of this game, I think, is a reason to be like, all right, they can get themselves out of sticky situations in the Premier League because Klopp made a switch and Liverpool were just way more impressive in the second half, like pushed our Darwin Nunez more central and it just
and put Jota actually, out there on the right.
Yeah, and they just
that
looked,
was a major move.
They just looked miles better. Curtis Jones took control of the game a little bit more as well.
Can I say something with Jota going out to the right? We know that's Salah's place, but like. And it was Bournemouth, and I'm not saying it was like some unbelievable team, and I'm not disrespecting Bournemouth, but like he looked very, very capable.
Mm.
And if I'm, you know, I mean, if I'm Salah, and he's going to do that, you know, especially with is Salah staying, is he going? Watching Jota, and people say, yeah, it's only one game. He's capable. Watching Jota on that side doing that can make you start to think, okay, if he went and we don't. That could happen now because he was impressive coming off of the right like that. I've not seen that before from him.
And what I think what Nunez gives me is, you remember like when Alan Boxic was at Juventus and Lazio and he wasn't really a volume goal scorer, but his role was to disrupt everything, hard running disruption. He's a better finisher, I think, than Nunez, and that's fair to say. But his primary role wasn't goal scoring. His role was getting in there, disrupting everything, and everyone else just basically, like, he was shaking the table, and everyone else, he's the food that falls off it. And I think this is the way that Liverpool, it's a much more sustainable way, I think, to attack. And that's why I think they're producing goals that they are. I mean, look at their goal difference. I mean, I know that we know that City's midfield is not as fluid as it has been in previous years. Nothing new there. But to me, it's so impressive that 21 games into Premier League season, Liverpool have a superior goal difference to Man City. Because normally it's like it's City that steamroller people and everyone else is just kind of squeezing out victories.
The defensive record, I think, is a major part of that. And I think it's something that they've not really been given a lot of credit for this season, actually, defensively. If you look at the top five, there's five goals between them in terms of goals scored. It's really interesting how condensed it is. And I think that that's maybe, going back to what you were saying before, Ian, about like why maybe people aren't talking about Liverpool for the title enough. I think because it is so condensed this season in that top four or five. And obviously, I don't think people are going to say, you know, Spurs are 8 points back from Liverpool. It's not, I don't think Spurs, people talk about Spurs being in a title race, but in theory, they are. I know that sounds a little bit kind of like, are they? But for those eight points separating the top five with 17 games to go,
that's nothing.
That's absolutely nothing. Liverpool just kind of slowly just did their thing. And I think that's kind of why people are struggling to find a quote unquote favorite, because everything's been like incremental. No one's come out and like blasted apart from Spurs.
Yes.
And then they fell off, right? But it was almost like they were a little bit too exciting to be too taken too seriously.
But I do feel with Spurs and the way Spurs themselves are, just getting those results and staying in there and hanging in there. They've got a team that can stop you from scoring now. Goalkeeper's very good. Van der Vetten's back. You know, Romero. Like Bentancur. Look how great Bentancur was against Man United. I like how tight it is. And what I'm hoping for with Arsenal, obviously, is that we can find the form. The guys can find the form. Looking at Martinelli come on the other day and score those goals like he did.
Right.
You know, it might give us a bit of a full sense of security, because I think Palace were terrible.
Should we move on to that perfect game?
Yeah, should we go on to that?
The Ian Wright derby?
Well, that's what they say, but like...
Derby Della Righty, is that what it is?
Derby Della Righty. They're in a really bad place, Palace. You know, Arsenal were very fortunate to get a Palace team that are... They're just in limbo. You know, in limbo with what they're doing. And it comes from way upstairs with what they were trying to do. Way back when they tried to get De Boer, because they want to play football. They want to progress. They want to get these players from the academy. They want to try and sign players and move them on so they can play better. They can do what Brighton have done, get in the Conference League, what West Ham have done. Those are the things that Palace should be doing. But every time they get that manager where they want to change the way they play, progressive in that, and it doesn't work, they go back to safety. They go back to Roy.
Palace are the biggest case of Kylo Ren syndrome in the Premier League, because they know what they have to do, but they don't know if they've got the strength to do it.
That's exactly it, Ryan. And you look at it now, the fans, I really feel for the fans. You know what I mean? Especially a generation of fans that like, they just want something. They want something. It's not too much to ask. And that's why that banner, it was so sad watching Roy look across at that banner. Oh. And I don't genuinely believe that it was so much directed to him, but more the board, right? Because that's all they want. They want some ambition showed, Moose. They want something. Give them something, because they're in that kind of category of football clubs that, yes, West Ham have broke through and got to the Conference League, and same with Brighton. So they can get something. The fans can have something to say, yes, we've got something to do. We can go to Europe. Palace fans who have been here for so long now, nothing. And the board have got to take that on board. They've got to take it on board.
The board have got to take it on board, man.
Take it on board, board.
That's the problem when you can contrast what your club is doing with clubs of similar, not necessarily sort of resources, but sizes.
Yeah, but 10 that years must be in frustrating. Here. Palace, yeah. 10 years in here, Moose, they should be doing better.
Also, in their part of London, if they had quite a forward-thinking administration, let's say,
God.
They would absolutely clean up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, yeah. Oh my God. Like, you get to live in South London. You play for Palace. You get to live in South London. Incredible. I mean, I, as someone that, that lived in Croydon for three years, I'm biased having lived. Well, Croydon's not South London, I know. But, you know, yeah. It's around the corner. Great area, great catchment, great vibes, great club.
So much potential.
Great name. I mean, Crystal Palace, my God.
You know, if you're a player now, you're coming through and you think, you know, or Palace, could I go to, which one are you going to go to at the moment? You know, Palace don't look like a team that's organised enough to even attract that player.
Do you know what's the saddest thing about this, though? 18 months ago, it was a no-brainer. We'd be like, of course you'd go to Palace. Of course you'd go and play for Patrick Vieira. Like, all these young players coming through. Yeah, of course you'd want to go and play for Patrick Vieira. And that's just like, the thing that's so confusing about Palace is how quickly it just U-turns from one to the other.
I worry for Palace simply because, you know, even when Patrick were there, the money's, you know, it wasn't spending that money what he needed. I think the maximum they could have gone to was 20 million. I don't know how many times they did that for him. But like, for a manager to come into Palace, he's going to want to play in a certain way. And if he comes in again and he tries to play in that certain way, are they going to get cold feet again? Are they going to stick with it? Because if they don't, then you're looking at players like Elise, like Eze, like Gehi, like Anderson. You're looking at players, Mitchell at the back, that will leave. They're probably even looking at it now and they're thinking to themselves, right, I want to see what's going on with Roy, who's coming in, what they're going to do, what's the plan. That's what I'd be doing if I was a player now at Palace, because you're thinking, this is quite a worrying situation and they're not free of a relegation fight yet. We know that there's a couple of teams that might get more points to touch in Everton and Forest maybe, but Palace are teetering very close in the way they're playing as well.
Yeah, they've got to be careful.
They've got to be very careful, because what I saw against Arsenal was a team that are coming in to play a team that have got four front men who are not on form. Obviously, Martinelli didn't start. Trossard started instead. And they did not press Arsenal. They did not get into any kind of deep block to stop those spaces that Arsenal are trying to exploit. They didn't do any of that. In the end, it didn't matter because Arsenal got two set pieces, which is good from Arsenal's point of view because they have to find another way to score. But Palace did nothing, Moose, in that game, what made me think that they had any chance of getting anything. Not one thing. They came there bereft of any ideas or any game plan.
I think also that was like, that looked like Arsenal had kind of got their shit together a little bit. They very much looked like a team who had a bit of a break. Saka, for example, looked fresher than he's looked for a while. I remember chatting to Andrew Mangan just after was it a week or so ago on Arseblog? And we were talking about Martinelli and Trossard, about how Martinelli maybe, because he wasn't in the best form. And I think Martinelli this season has been really struggling against deeper line defences from the start. And actually this kind of game was perfect, because by the time he came on, there's loads of space behind. The two goals he gets are like perfect Martinelli. Yeah. Like all the ingredients are there for him. The first one, by the way, I think has gone a little bit under the radar.
It's all the first touch, so that's the thing I love about that goal.
That's what it does, yeah. But especially when you're going through like that as well, guys, and you're making it blatantly obvious. That's where it's going in there, and you still can't stop it. Again, it comes down to you're in such control of the touches in there that the goalkeeper's in no man's land. I was trying to explain that again with the Calvert-Lewin chance. When you are in total control of the ball running towards the keeper, remember, he's constantly trying to narrow angles in the right place, but you cannot stop it when you have got the ball and you're in control, because he cannot narrow the angle. There's too much space there. And that is what I love about that finish. When he goes through like that, he looks, you do not think he's going to miss. He's not missing.
Because he sets it so well with the touch before.
Yeah.
You know what I loved about this weekend though was how much of a shockwave Arsenal's corners caused the footballing community.
I know, we've got 13. We're the most in the league.
You know that Tim and Eric gif where the guy's going, like the mind explosion? Yes. This was like what everyone was talking about Arsenal's. Did you see it on there? I was watching Match of the Day and they were like, is Martin Odegaard giving the signal with his socks? Is this the signal? Is that what I was just like?
You know what I love, right? The fact that, you know what I mean? Because we have been struggling to score goals for whatever reason, I think it's really minute details now, you know, the final ball in, you know what I mean? People just off form and rushing. But what I liked about what we're doing now, what Mikel's doing, is finding a way through the set pieces. Just in case that doesn't happen. Because if you can score with the set pieces, then what happens is that a team, whether it's Palace or whoever it is, then they have to do something else. And then hopefully that can free us up to then play the football that we want to play. So he's found another way. You know, he's found another way to utilize that. And that is why we got the head start in that game. Because I believe the way it went, if we don't get those two, Palace probably would have, they would have just sat back in and made it very difficult.
Yeah, they have to come out. Like, and this was a major part of Arsenal's play last season, which I think, like, I know I keep going on about this, but I don't think people are actually comparing how people are playing against Arsenal as much. And for example, last season, like Arsenal went through a stage of scoring really early. Mm. And they just opened the whole game up. Whereas this season, they've been struggling to score early. People have been way more switched onto the threat. They've sat a lot deeper. And Arsenal have been trying to figure out a solution, right? And I think that, you know, beating Palace 5-0 at home doesn't mean that all of a sudden your season is going to be like, right, this is it, we're off. You know, we beat. But it's the kind of game that they should be. What is it? Arsenal's joint biggest win in the league this season after they beat Sheffield United 5-0. I think it's Palace's biggest defeat of the season, though. So as poor as Palace have been, no one's put them away 5-0 this season. So they have to. And sometimes I think we were talking about the finishing before, and like Arsenal were creating the chances though. It was the finishing that let them down. I think something like that, just something as intangible as just a break, can unlock something like that. You know, like
you can, and that's what they need. They, a little bit. What's going to need to happen for me with Arsenal with this? We're getting to the crux end. Is that they're going to need to find that form where all the strikers are doing it. They need to find that. If they can then take advantage of the fact that, we've got set pieces now, people have to be careful of us, we can score that way, but then we can defend really well. Because you speak about when we was coming out at teams like last season, Brian, blasting them, really blasting, scoring early. It was amazing. The atmosphere is brilliant in there. But then I remember, was it Bournemouth or someone who scored in 9 seconds? Someone scored in 9, because we were so open. Right. We were so open with when we were doing it. So what Mikel had to do this season is we have to shore it up. And I think when you look at our defensive like data, we are defensively better than last season. But then I think that's to the what's it called? It's taken from the strikers.
To the detriment.
To the detriment is the word I was.
Have I used the right word there? We've got a fellow of literature here.
I know a fellow. Yes, we have a fellow here. To the detriment of the strikers, it's kind of made, you know, the strikers less potent for whatever reason. So I'm quite pleased that now, yes, we've got the set pieces that can maybe give us a goal, especially when you've got someone like Gabriel Magalhães attacking it like that. He was like
so aggressive.
He was like a monster. He was like Godzilla going through town in that box.
He was coming through unstoppable. Twice.
Yeah. Do you think that when he went up for it, you heard the noise as the cross was coming in, just him going, you know, like when Godzilla's charging?
Yeah, the atomic
breath. When he's charging.
Gabezilla.
Yeah. If I was like that big defender coming in, I would make that kind of noise.
You would?
Yeah, I would do that kind of noise. Intimidating.
Yes.
You know, and then you see that poor defender getting like, just obliterated in the box. Because like when you're coming, that must do something. I would definitely do that. It's terrifying. Yeah. Can I just quickly talk about the penalties in the West Ham?
Sheffield United.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to go into them lot. But like, how's Bowen not get a penalty there? And how do they get a penalty for a goalkeeper like, I can't deal with it.
Yeah, but I mean, look at AFCON. Look at Mozambique, Ghana. Like Ghana. The penalties in that. Oh, not being funny, but some of these. This is the thing now. The penalty discourse. I was trying to avoid it in this podcast, but we've got into it again. It's just
dragged
like
in. So we dragged
the ball hitting your hand. And you're not even looking in the same direction, and you're falling. You're falling. Are you supposed to outrace gravity? You're supposed to outrace gravity. The ball's falling. You're falling. What are you even supposed to do with that?
He's saying the game's gone.
They need to get one physicist as a VAR official and be like, no, it's against the laws of physics. It's impossible. Like, they're a scientist.
Can you imagine if they got a physicist?
That would be incredible.
A physicist in the VAR.
that would take it to another level.
David Moyes, I think he said after the game, we're at the point now where we just shrug our shoulders.
Yeah,
and accept
that
the decision.
Can't be good. Nothing should be like that, right? Simply because if you just shrug your shoulders, because people in power are not listening to the masses in respect of this is just, it's going wrong too frequently. There's people who are not good enough to do what they're doing. Sort it out. You can't have people just shrugging your shoulders, man.
Then you say that a different perspective. No, a different perspective as a man in his mid 40s.
Mm-hmm.
What a good approach to have to life in general. You know what? Like, actually, accept our mortality.
Apathy.
Not even apathy. Embrace.
The
ebb and flow of the universe. Listen, when Liverpool got their outrage against Spurs early in the season, what did we say? Don't worry. Someone else will be, it'll be someone else. What's that thing they say in life? Some days in life, you're the pigeon and other times you're the statue.
Mm-hmm.
And look, that day Liverpool were the pigeon, they were the statue, but you know what? You'll get to be the pigeon one day and it will come around. It will all come around.
So we should just shrug. Wait, what?
That's my approach.
So basically you're saying that for as someone who is on two football podcasts.
Yeah. I'm just accepting it, Ryan. I'm going with it. Let me try something new.
Should we talk about Brentford, Nottingham Forest?
Yes.
Ivan Toney's return.
Yeah, we should do. Yeah, let's talk about it.
And he's straight back in the discourse. I love this. Do you know what I love about this? How some people were so outraged by it. And then some people were just like, yeah, it's fine.
Thomas Frank knows what it is.
You know, because as a player, you're always trying to do these little cheaty things. Not only moving the ball, but moving the fucking foam. He's moving the phone.
Where's the law? Find me the law that says he's...
But it was in plain sight. And I couldn't understand that no Forest player saw it. No one said anything. Obviously, the VAR had not seen it to say, hang on a minute, he's moving the ball. When you finish with all that stuff, he's moved the ball. So I cannot believe that didn't happen. That doesn't even need to be public.
But do you know when no one said anything, Ian? Because they were in shock, because they were thinking, how can this man, with all he's been through, return with exactly the same energy with which he left? It was Cantona raising the corner flag after scoring against Liverpool, the penalty, after his ban. It's the same level.
It's the same energy.
Do you know what? Everyone's annoyed. It's because they didn't think of it before. That's why.
And now it's done. No one's going to be there. But what I love about it, because they asked me when I was done Kelly and writing that, it's something I would do. I would probably do that.
Of course.
And then you take all the shit, but you know that your fans, your players, they're not fussed. You'll take all the shit that comes with that. But I just love the fact that he's coming off his ban. Was it 8 month, 9 month ban, whatever it is. And he's gone straight back into, I don't give a fuck.
You know what it's like? Sometimes I've taught in schools now and again, like, you know, you do like teaching different classes, like literature classes, poetry classes, and you know, you're writing something on the blackboard and you can tell without even turning around who is causing trouble. You're like, I know, like, if you don't, I know exactly. I was like, that is Tony. There it is.
It's Tony.
How can you tell? I've moved position. I was like, I can tell that I could feel the energy. I could feel the shift, the gravitational shift. It's Tony.
He moved the ball three times. It was just like, you know what I'm thinking now as well, Ryan, watching it, because I've watched it so many times. I'm thinking, so what we should have like now, the draft excluder guy, whoever's a draft excluder now, the draft excluder guy has got to be the one who's watching people just in case they move the ball.
Yeah.
And then the guy on the wall has got to be watching the goalkeeper.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
And so he's got to be looking through.
He's got to be looking that way until he has to turn and look that way. Because otherwise he's just lying there looking at the goalkeeper and he's not doing anything. He could be looking at the guy moving the ball and saying, guys, he's moving the ball. So now the draft excluder's got a job instead of just lying there. Then he could turn around and be the draft excluder.
But then he's not keeping the goalkeeper company. Because that vital, those few seconds of eye contact, you're not alone. You're not all alone in this terrifying world.
Yeah, but him as a draft excluder, he's only telling the guys on the wall that they're moving the ball. Make sure he moves the ball back. That's his job now.
Can we just give credit to the incredible Ronaldinho, who was so good at hitting free kicks under the walls that he literally created a whole new concept. Like, he made people lie down. They were so afraid of Ronaldinho that he's traumatized an entire future generation of defenders. That is incredible.
He's made people lie down.
It didn't exist before him.
Do you know what I'd love to? Let's bring in the Tony rule.
Yes.
Players must not move the foam.
Yes. You can't move the foam.
Don't move the foam.
I want players to bring their own foam. I want there to be a player who basically has a rogue, pass. Yeah, just pull from, yeah, from a ship pass and just sprays the. Well, there's, sprays there's the travel, you know, like the travel shaving foams, the tiny ones?
Yes, yes.
Like a travel pack, and they just pull it out because they've got like big calf muscles, they can hide it. And they just go, they add their own.
Like Ian, Raheem's got the Gillette deal, right? So you could imagine it's like part of a promo, like little mini Gillette, like sensitive kind of pull out thing.
I still feel like moving the ball fine, but like obviously he's got the ball can't be like a yard, like half a yard away from the foam what the referee put there, because that's what the foam's meant to be there for. So the referee can put the, so the foam stays, the ball stays there, that's where you're taking it from. So then all of a sudden, you know, the referee looks around and Ivan Toney's moved a bit of foam over there. Like I saw David Luiz try and do it once. That's wrong. Moving the foam, it should be that, that is it.
You, the goal, is it wrong though?
You can't touch the foam.
Why? Ian, why?
Why can't
just?
Why
I'm not touch, just saying. Just
the referee just, has put why, the foam there because that's where he wants it taken from. You can't start moving.
But
the
why
foam.
Can't you? Why can't you touch the foam?
Well, you can't touch the foam, man.
But why? The I'm foam. Just asking. Why? I'm just asking. Listen, I'm just
because the referee has marked used the foam to mark the yes. ball, and that's where it's taken from.
He can't
you
even
don't move
himself.
The foam.
What about he if you move the foam?
Himself.
What if you move the foam back?
No, so no you're Ryan, actually, you're just huh? being facetious. They can't move the. Don't touch the foam once it's gone
no,
down.
Ian, no, you're talking to Ryan as a child here. Right there, look at him now. Look at Ryan right now. That,
he's laughing at me.
No, yeah, that's, I'm not like, that's no, the no, 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 no. Listen, that's I'm just. I know it was being a bit mischievous, but if you think about it, you know, greatest league in the world, richest yeah. league in the world. We're losing consoles. Our minds about some fucking foam.
That's some foam, baby.
It's so funny. Like, it's so funny. That's why. And I'm just like, well, actually, yeah, I get why everyone's a bit like, yeah, he created an advantage. But when you actually break it down, you know, like when kids just keep asking their parents, why? Why?
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
And at the end of the day, yeah. it's just like, just because.
Just because. Don't, that's just what like, he's waiting for me fucking, to say. I was like, so yeah, close I just want, to say it.
I was so just waiting the end to get to the point where it's just like, you just can't. You just... Anyway, that's very silly. But I just found it really funny how like quiet weekend with the Premier League and people are talking about whether Martin Ødegaard is communicating via his socks
with his
and
socks.
Like Ivan Toney moving foam around.
Just before we end, guys, yeah. I'm excited about the running. I like the fact that Liverpool have kind of like got themselves in a position where, right, we're here and we're going to cause a problem here. Arsenal, you know, with that result and whatever people think about it, it's a great result for Arsenal. They needed that. City are ominous. You know, we'll have to see what happens with Spurs. I've got to mention as well that obviously Salah's injury, right? You're saying, Moose, it's a lot more serious than people thought. So that's going to be a little bit of a downer for them. But I'm just pleased that we've got a real run-in happening now. We've got something that's happening now. It's really exciting.
Before we go, can we just give a quick shout out for AFCON? Oh, so, because AFCON yes. was oh wild last
oh,
night.
Gosh.
Ghana, like, thrown away Ghana. A 2-0 lead two, against yes. Mozambique in stoppage
Ivory
time,
Coast.
Basically.
Ivory
time,
Coast.
Yeah. But Ghana are out. Ivory Coast yeah. could go through as a best place, third place.
Third, yeah, third.
Very lucky if they did.
I
Very
tell you,
lucky.
They're so lucky. But they're so good. You know what? You look at them. They've got so much. Even the goal, what they scored just before, you know what I mean? And what was ruled offside. It was like, it's fractions, but like you could feel... In
so many
game.
Had what three offside goals
yes,
I think
yes you can they feel have. That they've got something they're doing something but then once that goal didn't go in they were just
it's very rare you can
place.
See the pressure consciously breaking
get
people
break yes
you're watching them and the counter is coming and they've had the disallowed goals and you see the frustration
yeah
one of them slashed I think first half slashed one and you saw it and you thought yeah that's panicked finishing when you're like you know you're 10 yards out you're on the angle but you should still get it on target yeah. and the ball's just being Wide. Cleared high Wide. And like wow there's no composure here. And you're seeing visibly the players are frustrated. When they go 3-0 down, they're gone. They're cooked at that point. They're cooked. Like, the three goals actually came fairly late. If you consider the context of the 4-0, it was 1-0 for actually a very long time. And Ivory Coast had a lot of opportunities. And it's mere pressure.
It pressure. Is pressure.
The thing about AFCON is, you play, obviously a lot of those players are playing in Europe, right? And I think sometimes they forget the intensity of what it is to go back in there and like, you're not
what
starting with that rep. You're not starting with that rep of like, you know, so there's a thing of some players don't want it enough and some players want it too much.
Too much, yeah.
And the perfect place to be is you either have to be an unfancy team like Cape Verde who are just slyly brilliant just but don't have huge stuff. Results, but just they're just footballers and that's resilient as hell and fearless, frankly, or you've got to be someone that goes in going, I don't care. Like, you have to be like a street fighter. You've got to go in and be like, I don't care what my rep is. I don't care how many fights I've won. This is the first fight ever. Yeah. And if you don't come in that intensity, you get cooked.
You're going to get cooked, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Because you've had players who've been waiting for you in the long grass for 2 years. They've been waiting on that day. They've got that calendar marked. The moment they see the groups drawn for AFCON, they're like, I'm coming for that person. And every thought they have, this is the thing. These people are basically, especially from like some of the countries that don't have the bigger reps, right?
Mm.
You to them, they look at that group stage, they think those three matches are the three most important games of my entire career. They're looking for Victor Osimhen, all those in the Guinea-Bissau, all those, and they're watching Osimhen thinking, I'm going to mark Victor Osimhen for 90 minutes and that will be the defining moment of my career. And that is a level of intensity that these players that play in Serie A, they're not ready for it.
We're going to be doing some AFCON stuff on Friday.
Oh, lovely.
Yes.
So, and we're actually going to be joined by a guest as well. We're going to have someone who's covering it come on the show as well. So we're going to do a full roundup of like looking ahead to the knockouts, because all the group stages will be done then. We'll know who is through to the knockouts and whether Ivory Coast have managed to scrape through or not. But
Carl Anker said he's never seen turmoil like it.
It's because Nigeria are living their best life.
I just love the...
Because those in Nigeria and Ghana, they're like, there's siblings had to elbow each other apart. You know those siblings in the back of the car that are always fighting? You tell them, stop, what are you doing?
Like,
so-and-so started it. So, well, stop it. Both stop it. And they just carry on.
That's Mayo. Is that Mayowa and Jeanette?
They'll be deep in the comments. Anytime, like I said, we said it. Anytime, anywhere in the world, one of those two nations does something. The other one is, the other nation is deep in the comments. Of course. Deep in the comments.
Oh, I love it. It's going to get better. So,
Ian, before we go, quickly, Moose and I did this. We were talking yesterday on Stadio just about this silly game. We were talking about this thing that happened with Manuel Neuer in the Bayern game. Right. So, if Moose and I were in a training session and we each had 5 free kicks, 5 penalties, and 10 freestyle one on ones with Manuel Neuer in a training session, how many do you think each of us would score out of that 20?
Seriously. Did you say you can have penalties though?
We get 5 penalties each. We get 5 direct free kicks each from outside the box, and then we get 10 freestyle like dribbling one on ones.
I'm not sure. Apart from the penalties, how many you lot get with the other stuff? I don't think the free kicks and for the first penalty with both of you, because you lot will be so intimidated, he'd probably just stand there because he knows that you lot are going to try and be very precise with whatever you're going to do. And see what you do with the first one. You can always give them the first one.
Ian, I said, I would never score against Neuer because here's the thing. The first I'd take might be a free kick. He'd catch it. Mm. Then all my friends who'd come along to watch me would be like, oh, go on, Moose. And I have 19 more. Then I'm thinking the low self-esteem kicks in. And I'm so demoralized that that becomes an ordeal. So I think psychologically, because each time you repeat one and just look at Neuer, it's just going to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
The goal will get smaller and smaller. And that's just what will happen. Because I think a player like that, it's just the aura, isn't it?
You'll have a much better chance with the penalties.
I think that's right. That's what Ryan said. Ryan said penalties first. Yeah.
With the free kicks and stuff like that. We've got to be talking about prime Neuer. We can't be talking about...
No, I'm talking about Neuer now.
Even Neuer now, to be honest.
Even Neuer now.
Because the speed, Ryan, the speed...
You don't get prime Rye.
Prime Rye. The free kick...
We hit them so slow. It's so slow that way we hit free kicks, isn't it? He's got better footwork than I have. So like, you know, you can't beat a keeper with a step over if he's got a better step over than you have.
Is, you can't take away the intimidating factor of Manuel Neuer in the goal when you two are getting ready to do what you're doing. You know, there's certain goalkeepers have aura and have stature that will make you feel differently. If you were going, for instance, with all due respect to him, and I'm just going on the size, you know, we know he's a good keeper, but if you were taking if you had the same situation against David De Gea, you'd probably feel differently about him. Probably would. Because it's the stature of the goalkeeper.
This is the thing, exactly. Because
you'll go into another place of, I've got to do all my best stuff.
Mm.
Sometimes you don't.
That is such a great question. Yeah, because it's humbling. It's humbling, isn't it?
I feel like you lot should be humbled. You probably score maybe 2 penalties each, maybe.
When we did a jokey answer and then we did a serious answer, and you've actually given us more than we thought we would score in a serious answer.
Seriously?
Yeah. I said if I scored one out of any of those against an elite goalkeeper, I'd be happy, because they're an elite goalkeeper.
I'll tell you what would be even better with the penalty situation is if you had a crowd there. Then it goes to another level. You have to have a crowd there. Yes. Like with the penalties, you have to walk from the halfway line.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know, the whole ritual.
And then we're talking about a whole different vibe of like...
I think I could lean into the crowd bit a bit, do the little like...
Listen, guys, thanks very much. Thanks for that. I really enjoyed that today. Nice.
Lovely, yeah. Great to catch up.
Thank you very much, guys. I'm going to have to say until next time. Till Friday.
Yep,
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Musa Kwanga. Thank you very much, Ryan. Hun, I'll see you Friday, guys. And until then, stay safe, everybody.